All right, let me get these files open while I hit start recording here so we can get some B-roll. Boom, boom, boom.
The space behind Jamie is all clean and it's not going to be accepted anymore when he shows up on stream.
He's never showing up on stream again. Jamie's tired of everyone making fun of him.
I was literally on the stream last week. What are you talking about?
I can't even tell. I can't even tell when Jamie's there.
Oh my God.
I was doing all right.
Yeah.
I was feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
I was feeling pretty good by the end of that. I was like, oof, I don't want to go home. That's a bad sign.
Drake was there. He was making the club blow up.
I don't think that's how that works.
Is that not?
No.
Songs don't just come true.
Mm-mm.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gimme the Loot podcast, the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition actual play podcast that at least followed through with one of its schedule changes this week. My name's Turner. I'll be your Dungeon Master and host of pre, mid, and post-show announcements. At least until I inevitably become the victim of the collapse of a civil engineering project directed by Todd the Tiefling. That's not just a callback, will be relevant this episode as well. Season 2, Episode 7. The guys finish their pre-trip trip. Things happen, I promise. If you're a new listener, welcome, and if you're a returning listener, welcome back. We sincerely appreciate you making time for us in your busy podcast listening schedule. As always, a special thank you to our patrons whose investment and dedication make sure that we can provide you with bigger and better content. A reminder that Gimme the Loot is not a family-friendly show due to a mix of profanity, crude humor, violence, the occasional weird timeline, and random profanity that will occur should you point out that timeline, and, of course, gore. And hey, if you're one of our U.S. listeners, I have got a special treat just for you. You get to fix the hot fucking mess that a rabid Supreme Court has left our country in. Now, I know you may be saying, Turner, is this a Patreon benefit? And my answer to you is no, it is actually not. This is a benefit that's free for all. All you got to do is get your asses down there in November and vote. You may ask yourself, well, wait, I'm not registered to vote yet. What can I do? Well, guess what? We're going to put a link down in that timeline that's going to help you figure out exactly what you need to do to actively participate in the society and culture at a level to restore and protect, you know, women's bodily autonomy, our cultural identity, the rights for so many Americans that are just going to be shit upon if Ted Cruz has his way. And if anything, if you don't want to do it to fix all those other problems, do it at least as a giant fuck you to Ted Cruz. I don't know if there's a more compelling reason than I can give you than that. So, with that in mind, let's get back to Harland as Todd the Tiefling, Andrew as Moyle Mossberg, Jamie as Eldrin Theneros, Jazz as Fate of Normir, and Anthony as Babatunde Agu. Let's start the show. The road trip goes relatively easily. You guys wind your way through. I'm pretty sure Moyle makes you stop for waffles and really, truly real syrup at least once, even though he can't eat. which makes the stop seem even weirder. As you wind your way through, you pass by the Winged Peaks, the home of the largest community of Arakokra, Kenku, and Alan? There's a slow chill that runs down Eldrin's spine as he gets close to the largest community of Alan on the northern continent, until you guys finally reach the capital of Dak, Toba. So you guys roll up to the edge of the city, and it's a really dramatic shift from the landscape that you guys have been traveling through for the last couple of days. The vast majority of Cardona is very strongly rural. You have the Iron Congress and the block of civilization around the Rattlar Mountains. And then you have two or three larger cities where there's a large trapping and fur trader that's run by an orcish family. Their headquarters has a fairly bustling community sprung around it. Same thing with one of the main logging operations, one of the big syrup producers. So those couple of three bigger Cardonan companies have a thriving community around them. But most of them are small to medium size little city states or little villages that have grown up in that community, and very similar to the way that the collective in Sama works, maintain a national identity, but somewhat operate independently, but are supported by the Crimson Rangers.
but very, very strongly rural. Even as you guys have traveled through some of the more well-maintained trade roadways that are used by the fur trappers, the syrup traders, and the loggers, you know, it's been a much more picturesque view than what you're used to seeing down the winding ways as you travel, which is mostly fucking billboards for the next duckies. And, you know, the open grass field that they bulldoze a little bit on each side of the winding way to provide a little bit of extra coverage and a little bit of extra clearance. But when you guys come around the edge of the embankment that leads down into the city, you get a glimpse of just, it's very similar to when you first drove up to Taliesin for the first time, just the shock of the otherness of the city. The Toba isn't by any means anywhere as wacky as Taliesin, but it stands out dramatically against the slope of the wing peaks that it somewhat stands against. There are these brightly colored narrow row houses that start at a higher elevation at the embankment that you're on and then wind your way down into the bay, just blue and red and greens and yellows with these sharply sloped roofs that are clearly there to provide them, you know, some protection from the heavier snowfall in the winter. The town itself, you guys are up on a ridge right now, and it winds down through this ridge, through this curving pathway into, it's broader than a valley, but it's a depression in the land that leads up to the bay. Dead center in the city is this massive palace, which aren't as common in Normir because of the different types of government. Had you gone down and seen the papal seat in Hiko, you would have seen the papal seat of Tritherion has a massive cathedral that they rule from. But, you know, most of the other countries of Normir have trended towards different governments that don't have a central monarchy, unlike the twin rulers of Dak. So it's this sweeping palace that has two twin spires spiraling up out of it. And there is a broad curving, like open pavilion balcony on the front and the front facing the embankment and the side of the house which faces the bay, and on doming over that, this huge kind of open area pavilion is this intricately carved and worked crystal and metalworked canopy, which provides a certain level of protection, but again, is just very breathtaking as you crest over it. You guys wind your way down through this combination, primarily timber buildings. There is some stonework as you wind your way down from that embankment and make your way towards the bay. You are having some trouble getting the Winnemejo into the streets. You know, long haul caravanners are a part of the trade routes that run from the trade centers, but not as much so in Toba. The streets are a little bit more narrower and a little bit more proportioned for normal carts. So Todd, I'm going to need you to make me another animal handling check here as you guys kind of navigate your way down into the city. And from where you're at, you can absolutely see this broad sweep of the bay that reaches into the city, and where there is a certain number of canals that work their way up and work their way into, you know, portions of the city that provide a little bit of a water taxi service. There's a little bit of a Venice thing going on. Some of the houses are perched right on top of and bridge over those individual canals. But there's this broad sweeping bay and the warehouses that support a port of this nature, both inland on the three large river conduits that pour through the city. And then there's a curve of these multicolored fishing, what you assume are fishermen's housing on the western side. The eastern side of the bay seems to have the highest collection of ships moored at the docks there and would probably be where you're headed.
I rolled a 13.
Okay. You guys hear a little bit of a grinding noise as Todd pilots the Winnemejo into an alley that's not quite wide enough. And you hear as it grinds up against the side of this building before finally coming to a little bit of a halt.
Like a glove.
Yeah, OJ's glove. You just murdered our Winnemejo.
Perfect. Perfect park job.
Wait, are we stuck?
Yeah, you guys are about halfway down to the bay, passing through a kind of a residential area of the upper city that Todd has wedged the Winnemejo in between two sets of these really colorful row houses.
So we're stuck.
Yeah. Right now, you guys are currently wedged in good. Because Todd, as he's proven before, when Todd encounters a structural challenge, his answer is, well, just push on through and it'll be okay. So using his earlier decisions against him, we've established that Todd wouldn't have stopped and backed out. He would have tried to plow through. And now the window major is firmly wedged between these two buildings.
Oh, Todd.
We were getting out and going to a boat anyway, right?
Could we use the maple syrup as a lubricant to get the Winnemajo out?
If you're using maple syrup as a lubricant, you got it all wrong.
Oh, God.
You got it all wrong, sir. You got it all wrong.
Obviously, you've never been to the Dragonborn orgies. As they're called, Dragonborgies.
God. All right, so, damn it. Let me see if I can use this spell the way I want it.
Anthony, were you asking a question? I thought you were saying something before Dragon Borgies came out.
Oh, I was. Baba was just saying we're about to get on a boat anyway.
It's true. Does anyone have any grease?
Is there any place safer to park this thing than here? It's not going anywhere, guys.
I love Todd's silver lining.
It's almost like I meant to do this.
He still walks out and goes, boop, boop.
All right, what are you guys doing? Winnemajo is firmly wedged into a public city street. Nobody has said anything to you yet, but that may not last. What are we doing?
So I mean, we're definitely going to get a ticket if we leave this thing here, right? Like, we should probably get someone to move it and then park it somewhere, you know, appropriate. Todd?
Wait. No one said I couldn't park here.
Let's just have Baba push it out.
Do you see any signs in here say towing enforced?
Are there any signs that say towing enforced?
Is there a sign that just says no parking?
No. There are neither no parking signs nor a sign that says towing enforced.
Seems fine to me then. Let's go.
You do seem to have caused a little bit of a traffic jam as now a cart full of fish has pulled up behind you.
Shit.
All right, now we've got an issue.
But, you know, the middle-aged human male behind the cart, two donkeys, cart full of fish, just stops and goes, oh, hey, you know, must be some trouble. And it seems to be patiently waiting for you to get by, to get it done.
Oh, no. Mm. He might wait there till he dies. He might never go around.
Too nice to say anything.
Too nice to go around.
What are y'all doing?
You're going to go through the building? We should find someone to help us pull this stupid thing out of here.
Hey, do you got any magical things to kind of... Do you have, like...
Grease?
I'm checking.
Grease?
Yeah, can you magically produce the thing of lubrication?
Can't you do that with thaumaturgy?
No, I just shake stuff.
Don't we have a water bottle for that?
We do have a jug for that.
The alchemy jug. Fate goes and runs back inside to the room, grabs the alchemy jug from under the bed.
If we awarded inspiration out of MVPs, you fuckers remembering you have a magical item for problem solving would have earned you inspiration right there. I'm sorry that goes against the rules of the podcast. So
Fate runs to grab the alchemy jug and then stops to study to remember which corks undo which, so we can get the oil out and try and slick us through this joint.
All right,
we have used the oil, right?
I used the oil once and got myself electrocuted anyway.
I will say at this point you guys have enough time has passed that you guys know exactly what each one of those plugs do for the alchemy jug. So
okay, all right,
I will give you that you guys have experimented with it enough to finally have figured out that item. Mm-hmm. so walk me through what are you doing here?
So I'm going to go back inside. I'm going to climb up the hatch up to the roof.
Okay.
And then I'm just going to walk around the perimeter of the Winnemajo and just pour the oil down the side and down the walls and try and then, you know, go back inside before Todd decides to gun it and kill me.
Okay. Let me just check something real quick.
Oh, no. I don't like it.
Fate, are you anointing the Winnemajo?
Damn it, coming with a mouthful of Oreo.
Wait, what am I doing?
Does Google have a table that says how much grease it will take to unstick a cock?
No, I was trying to figure out creative ways to get Jazz to say cock now so I could edit that together. my brain locked up. I was like, oh, wait, I was doing something real D&D now. What do you get that dice? What do they call it when the dice gets jammed in the side of their dice tray?
Cock. Oh.
Ah, you got him.
Oh, see, that's working.
You got him.
But now it'll be you saying that and Anthony answering.
Oh.
What the fuck is that thing called? A alchemy jug.
Mm-hmm.
God damn.
Moyle, I am not a priest of any nature, nor am I ordained in any sort of priesthood. If you would like to use this opportunity to bless the beast that is the Winnemajor, feel free.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. It doesn't explicitly say what kind of oil, right? So you're going to get to pick, but it will be that type of oil going forward. So what kind of oil does your alchemy jug produce, Fate? And it's a Fate question since he's the one using it.
Damn it.
Olive oil.
That would make sense.
Wait, what? What did you say?
Sorry, I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street and Gonger talks like that. Sorry.
Motor oil?
Yeah.
Oh, sesame oil. That's another kind of oil.
Corn oil.
So
we got baby oil, olive oil.
Extra virgin olive oil, since it's Fate using it.
Wow. So my thoughts went to like canola, peanut, and then just like straight up motor oil.
Ooh, duh.
I want to go with the motor oil.
Okay.
For potential shenanigans going forward.
So not cooking.
In a world without motors.
Is that Mossberg motor oil?
Seeing as how they're the only Draken operation I know of. But then you got to think about the fact that I'm magically stealing oil from your father while he's destroying the planet.
Yeah, well, you're going to create a environmental disaster by pouring motor oil all over the Winnemajor, right by a bunch of rivers.
But what do you mean with potential shenanigans?
I mean, you never know what you can do with some motor oil.
So here's the thing. The words have been said. There's no taking it back. No. The problem is there's only one kind of motor oil that you would be familiar with in this universe. And that's the kind of motor oil that the Mercantile Guild uses in their combustion engines going forward, which has a little bit of a different flammability rating than our normal motor oil. So, Fate, you uncork it, out comes up a bubbling crude. You lube up the sides of the Winnemajor. It manages to creep down into it. It's firmly coated the edges there. You guys can't back up at this point without running over that guy in his fish cart.
Do it.
And the three other carts that have backed up behind it.
Them too.
Is Todd driving forward, or who's going to drive the Winnemajor forward? You do see about half a block down that the street opens up into a wider plaza. And then now that you guys are familiar with what happened, you could either make the choice to park the Winnemajor in that plaza and lock it up, or pull it back out to the edge of the city and stash it and lock it up. You could always consult Ogstar, try and buy-god your way down to the boats with it, or any number of options. But first, who's driving it out, grinding it out of the, tipping my hat, who's grinding it out of the alleyway here?
Todd got us into this mess. Todd gets us out.
Yeah, it's your problem.
I can get us out.
No.
I can get us out.
Todd should no longer be allowed to drive.
I actually don't think this is a mess. I actually intended to park the vehicle there.
Todd, it is quite literally a mess. I just poured oil all over the side of the car.
That was your choice. I thought we parked very well.
It's a street, man.
I haven't finished anointing the car.
Todd, give me an animal handling roll here.
Oh, boy.
Now, you're going to get the Winnemajor out one way or the other. Whether or not you succeed or fail on this will determine whether or not you create enough sparks to ignite the oil on the edge of the Winnemajor in these buildings. So, give me the roll.
What about a 12?
Fuck.
Oh, no.
No sparks on a 12.
I am sorry, Todd. That's not the number that you were shooting for. That's the number I was hoping for. So the Winnemajor grinds its way through, and it's painful, man. It is that scene in Plane, Trains, and Automobiles where the car is spinning around, and fucking Steve Martin looks over at John Candy, and he's laughing maniacally, and flames shoot out the side of it, and all of a sudden John Candy's the devil. Like, it is that grinding, like... whoever's doing that noise on mic right now, for example, who's grinding something on mic.
That's me.
It's going to drive me crazy when I have to edit out. So you got this grinding, and right as it clunks out, you guys all breathe a collective sigh of relief. Just 1, 2, 3, 4 little five sighs of relief. But then there's a sick, are you still grinding, dude?
No.
Who was that? Andrew?
You must hear my air conditioning kicked in.
I'm not making any noise.
No, I scratched my head for a second. That might have been me.
Okay. It's just been constant.
It's actually the gears in Fate's head that were grinding.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sighs of release, and then woof, what sounds like the opposite of a sigh. With a 12, I will say that you got clear. You haven't set the city on fire, but the edges of the Winnemajor, the roof of the Winnemajor, is in flames right now. And you hear that guy behind you as he turns his fish cart in passing going, oh, that just doesn't look very good there. You fellas might want to take care of that quick before the guards show up, eh?
Water? Yes.
I cast my water bubble and move it around to all the flames.
Look at that.
And it can't do a save, so it's definitely going to get caught.
No, it absolutely works. Again, you guys remember that I gave you powers.
You guys or me?
Baba does.
Well, we knew.
I had another solution available, but
you're gonna drop a house on it? is that what you're just gonna be? Drop a house on it.
I was gonna reverse fireball.
Wait, what?
That wouldn't work.
Yeah, would
I can tell you.
Is it ice ball? Is this ice ball? Water ball?
Something like that. So yeah, water ball.
Does it just bring fire back into your hand?
You were gonna fireball our vehicle?
No.
Never mind. I already got a plan. It worked. No.
Problem solved.
I really want to pursue that line of questioning.
Nope.
Hold on. Objection overruled. Damn it. Curse you for being so on game, Anthony. Baba climbs up the little ladder onto the roof of the Winnemajo. You guys see all the moisture that has been clinging to his fur since your pentahedron shards leveled up, bubble out forward, kind of these individual droplets. They flip, and come together and growing. And it seems like, man, you would think he would be soaking wet for the amount of water that comes out to form. How big is the watery sphere that you form there, champ?
It's pretty big. It can fit like four grown people could fit in it.
5 foot radius, so 10 feet.
10 feet diameter, yeah. So, yeah, this thing's pretty beefy, and there's still, you know, I would say probably a good, you know, yeah, it steams up a little bit as you douse out the flames, and you run it up the side of the Winnemajo and then back up the other side. And, then, you know, a crowd of onlookers goes, oh, hey, that's really clever there, you hoser. we're gonna really piss off some of our Canadian fans, because my only reference for Canadian culture, Strange Brew, with Bob and Doug McKenzie, eh? So take off. I forgot my toque. Anyway, so that you managed to put out the fire, no problem. All right, so you guys park in here, going back and parking at the edge of the city, trying to by God your way down to the docks. What's your plan for getting through the town?
We should park as soon as possible. As soon as, like, there's a good spot to do it in and walk.
Yeah.
This plaza you're in, you guys can pull over to the side to where you're not blocking the street and not blocking a major building, and lock her up and head on down.
Who makes streets not big enough for a Winnemajo? First of all.
Really? That's what we're going to do? We're going to blame the city construction?
Let's do that.
We should definitely blame city design on this.
Eldrin kind of nudges Todd. Please move. Please. You're done.
I'm not done, sir.
I want to park the car. I'm parking it.
Well, you can take these keys, because you know what you got to do with this when we get out the car.
Yeah, you're the one who's been holding them, buddy, so you know where they've been.
I don't have to hold the keys to drive the vehicle. I don't know what you're talking about.
You were just holding them, though. You just handed, you telling me to take them. They were in your hand. You touched my poop. That's what you're saying. You touched the poop.
Nope.
It's okay.
The ass keys. You got it. It's fine.
All right. You guys come out. Boop, boop. The Winnemajo shut. Eldrin Keister's the keys. And you guys begin working your way down to the docks. Is there anything that you guys wanted to do in the city before you hit the docks?
I'd like to divvy up these healing potions immediately.
Who gets two? Everyone gets one except for...
We all get one, except Eldrin can have two.
Why does Eldrin get two?
Why does Eldrin get two?
Because me and Eldrin are the only people who went, and I don't need to.
There you go.
Y'all not the only people that went. We was all there.
Are you sure the cleric shouldn't have the two?
You should get none. You should.
You have all the healing spells. You're fine. I mean, I do too. I
was about to say, you do too.
I actually don't, though. I don't have the healing.
I feel like the glass cannon should maybe have the two.
Yeah.
Not till it starts cannon.
All right, so you guys work your way down through the city. The overall colors of the row houses get a little bit more muted as you get through the more industrial area, where these big shipping warehouses and trade warehouses, both storing goods that come in on the boats, which come into Toba, but then also that come upriver to be loaded out. You know, this is probably where the most amount of trade goods move in and out of the northern part of the Narmerian continent. Nashtau would be the port of this scale, and the south, which you guys have been to. But as you wind your way around, because again, it's set in to not a cliff, but very much set in tiers, where there'll be like a level of the city that expands out for about 5 or 6 streets, 7 or 8 blocks, and this U shape, which leads its way down towards the bay. And then you guys will reach a section where you go down kind of a ramped street or a set of steps as you work your way through the alleys. When you get on the other side of the industrial warehouse district, the colors start to come up again. And as you get to the big horseshoe curve of the bay, you kind of plink out from the alleyway that you've been wandering down, kind of right dead center into it, in a little bit more of a almost a recreational area, where there's this, you know, 5 or 6 blocks of these extremely colorful row houses all pinched together, and shops and cafes and a couple little bars around to the western curve of the horseshoe. The picturesque aspect of it starts to fade into some older muted blues. You start to see a few more metal roofs come in. The buildings are more wooden and timber, slapped together with tar instead of the colorful stucco and brick that, the area that you're in right now. A little bit off of the kind of broad boardwalk slash street that encircles the edge of the bay, over on the fisherman's side, there's almost like a tower in the water, but it's a wooden ramshackle construction where it looks like somebody started building a fisherman's shack and then built another one on top of it and built another one on top of it, to where it's almost like a mushroom shape of buildings stacked on top of buildings. That's the bizarre ramshackle sea tower. But then over to the right is very clearly the actual port center where the trade vessels are ported up. You guys tell me where you're going from here. How are you finding a vessel?
I'm trusting this entire operation to Moyle.
To who?
I'm sorry.
To whom?
What the fuck did I just hear?
To whom?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
The only person here who's got any...
He's the one with this sailor experience, dude. No?
Yeah.
On rivers. Rivers.
Yeah, we...
Which is where we are.
Is it...
Announcements this week, and there are a couple of big ones. First off, as always, Harland and Jamie continue to pop up in their other podcast projects, like the Pop-Up Filmcast. Check out the show notes below. We have changed the night we are streaming on. Monday, 7:30 Central Standard Time. That's the only time zone I can learn. Y'all Google conversions. We will be streaming with our regular content, which is going to be a shift back to creative content, like the Parties of Five coming up next week, the roleplay versus roleplay, some additional DM splainings, things along those lines. We are still going to have occasional guests. We're definitely still going to have fight nights. And we'll add additional nights streaming Wednesdays, the occasional Saturday, maybe a Friday here and there, when we have a little bit of extra content to share on those nights. We're scaling back our guest quests for a couple of reasons, really. But while we may not be speaking to as many people in the community for the purposes of the stream, we again want to say thank you to everybody who made time for us. We are going to continue to reach out and score guests from time to time, but we just decided to make a little bit of a shift going forward. Number two, despite this coming out on a Tuesday, our new official release day is Mondays. And in order to get back onto that cycle, there's going to be 2 release weeks in a row with guest quest content. That means you're going to get a guest quest next Monday, and you're going to get a guest quest the Monday after that. And I'm going to do everything I can to actually get an extra guest quest or 2 in that 2-week period. That'll allow me to have an extra couple of weeks to bank up a few episodes in advance, so I can spend a little bit more time editing them in the future instead of the mad crush that we're in right now. Was going to start that this week, but didn't want to split it in the middle of an episode split or a session split. So we're doing it right after the guys have gotten on the boat to start the next leg of their journey, because it's kind of an organic place to do it. Appreciate your patience while we get that spooled up and get it shifted over. And you know what? Yeah, be sure to take some time to check out those guest quests. If you haven't listened to some of them, maybe circle back up the feed and grab them. They are some incredible people that we've gotten the opportunity to speak to about some really cool topics, and we appreciate their time, and there's no better way to say thank you to them than to listen to those episodes, then head over to whatever content they're producing, give them some likes and follows. And hey, you know what? The easiest way to keep up with our new streaming schedule would be, or announcements about the show like this, follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/GMDLcast, or at GMDLcast on Twitter, which is really the only one we maintain. There's some Instagram stuff, and we are going to try and do more of that in the future. But for right now, you hit us on Twitch, you hit us on Twitter, you're going to stay the absolute most current with our content as it comes out and as we make announcements.
And hey, while you're out there on the internet, be sure to swing by whichever podcast platform provides you with your entertainment and rate, review, and subscribe. It really is important for smaller podcasts like us, helps make us more visible, gets us in front of more eyes, and helps us grow. We appreciate you making the effort. And if you leave us a review, good or bad, one way or the other, there's a pretty good opportunity we're going to read it on the stream when I finally remember to look at those before I start recording these. Maybe in a future where I have a little bit more breathing room on the edits and can do that. See? Win, 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 win in the future. And one last thing that I don't want to wait to the end of show announcements. Again, congratulations to Anthony, Jazz, and friend of the show, Wendell, for their participation and their hosting of a panel at DreamCon this year. There was one TTRPG panel at DreamCon, and it was run by guys from our show. And it was about how POCs can get involved in TTRPGs and make them their own. And, you know, that was the only TTRPG panel at that show. And it existed because Anthony took the initiative to step out, you know, put himself out there and have a really positive impact on the community. And I can't say how enthusiastic I am for him making the effort and going the extra mile and, you know, really, really putting himself out there in front of a crowd of people to talk about the game that we love. I really appreciate Wendell, you know, jumping in and helping provide some additional context and background. And Jazz was there. So congratulations to those guys for a job well done and Jazz for participation. And back to the show.
How close are we to the dock, by the way? Are we on the dock?
Imagine, what's the name of the big pier kind of in Chicago?
Piers Morgan.
Navy Pier?
It's very Navy Pier-esque where you guys are at right now. So you're on a broad boardwalk that is about two streets wide, basically, but the edge of that kind of comes right up to the water. Where you're at right now, there's some steps down that go to, again, a little bit more of a recreational pier. There's one or two people fishing, but they're not fishermen. Like, they're like people who are casually fishing on it. There are kids that are kind of playing around and throwing crumpled up bread into the water to see a fish come up and eat it. You know, at this point, we're probably early afternoon. So people have just finished their lunch. They are taking a moment before they head back up into the city and get back about their business. So it's a little bit crowded. There is a little bit of a festive element. The overall tone of this city as you worked your way through it has been extremely positive and friendly. The capital of Dax is an extremely affluent city, and they're somewhat isolationist in some ways, but, you know, they're also fairly well liked by everybody because of just the good-natured cheer. You get a little bit of a festive vibe, but that's more just from everybody here just being really kind of having a base layer of nicer than you would expect. But yeah, you are right up on the water, Moyle. To the left of you, you can see where it curves around, and you can see some fishing boats down on that side, but those are more kind of the smaller fishing two-man dinghies that would go out and do some individual fishing, probably a couple of lobster boats, and definitely more than a couple of small to medium-sized fishing boats. Definitely not well-suited for intercontinental travel. Over to the right, yeah, I mean, you can see a broad array of vessels there. A very lithe, brightly green and silver worked elven darter, which is more than likely the property of an extremely wealthy adventuring party or a mage or a noble person. Darters are extremely fast vessels, often suited for combat in some way. They're not something that you would normally associate with trade, but this is the only portion of the dock that we really could accommodate it. You see a very, very, very squat, flat dwarven steamship, a few wooden traditional sailing ships, but again, primarily concerned with commercial trade. It's not like there's a cruise ship down this way. That's not what Toba's known for.
No party boats, huh?
Are we going into an ocean, or are we able to stick to the rivers?
No. You're basically sailing out the Bay of Manitoba down to South America. North America and South America aren't connected in this universe. Central America is kind of curved around and is actually what makes up the southern fens. So you guys have already kind of been in that portion. So you've got to basically get a ocean sailing vessel, sail southward through one of the radiant seas, skirt the Godspire and the current which circulates around it and land in Shaitan, which is the capital of the Mercantile Guild in Sama.
I say we try to get a battle boat because you never know about pirates.
So you guys have got basically free passage on a Mercantile Guild vessel. So you guys need to find a Mercantile Guild vessel to take a trip on.
Question. Mm-hmm. Are there horse latitudes in this universe?
What the fuck is a horse latitude?
Ah, well, a horse latitude is in the Atlantic where the wind is a little messed up and people would often have to throw out the horses so they could lighten the boat.
So Normir spins on a horizontal axis with no tilt because fantasy. So it doesn't spin the same way as regular Earth. You know, we spin on a vertical axis with a tilt. Normir spins on a horizontal axis with no tilt.
Well, there's planets that do that.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. So probably no for what you're questioning.
So there's a constant steady stream of wind. We could get a sailboat. We wouldn't run into an issue like that.
Wind isn't as big of a consideration with intercontinental travel down here because of the current that's created by the Godspire. So think dead center in the Atlantic Ocean, where Atlantis typically is pictured, this massive crystal pillar/mountain, and around it, there is a constant churning clockwise current as you get closer and closer to it. And it casts this radiant glow out into the waters. So there's almost a little bit of a stardust effect for a good portion of that inner ocean. So there's this churning current that runs in a constant circle around the Godspire that draws that entire central ocean around it. Now, while you're thinking about that, the way that the continents were arrested in their expanse from Pangaea when the Godspire impacted the continent caused there to be four primary channel oceans that radiate to the north, south, east, and west. So when you're traveling from continent to continent, you basically travel down one of those channel seas or one of the radiant seas into that primary vortex and then ride that current around to wherever you want to go. If you get too close to it, you can get drawn in, but it's kind of like, you know, making the Kessel Run in whatever how many parsecs. By flying through the areas where the ocean pulls you, you can get even faster. Sometimes captains get a little bit too daring and get pulled in.
Like a gravity assist?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a slingshot. That's exactly how Baba ended up in Manitoba in the first place, as he was on a boat that tried to get a little bit too greedy, lost control, and got slingshotted way further north than he was intending to go. Baba was originally intending to land in Todd's hometown, but ended up fucking north. And so that's why he was, you know, wandering south and ended up at the waypoint where you guys all met up on that fateful day. So what you guys will need to do is go find a mercantile vessel, one of three, hypothetically, and pick which one you want to go on. And then you guys will set sail. Because there just happened to be three different boats parked. One of the big different things you've noticed since you got up north is you guys haven't seen a hide or hair of a ducky even around the Mercantile Guild. So you've instead seen what looks like a large wasp or hornet that has been the mascot in the northern area.
Tim Hortons.
Ah, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah. Can we get some donuts there?
Donkeys.
So yeah, it was Tim Hornet, the Horny Hornet, is the mascot up north. So you can see a Tim Hornet standing in a sailor's outfit. Like there's a big statue of him like waving in the boats because they have to brand everything in the Mercantile Guild. And there are three boats parked in the docks flying Mercantile Guild colors.
All right, let's head over to the three boats and we'll do Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo.
Let's pick the one with the most weapon.
Oh, he's going to Goldilocks it. Okay.
Well, there is a little bit of a difference between the three boats. So as you walk down, you can see they are all roughly the same size, but they are a very, very different construction. One is an older looking, very plain wooden vessel that is being with about a medium sized crew. It's got a dwarven captain and a group of other dwarves working with them. And one, it's weird to see a batch of dwarves working on a Mercantile Guild vessel, which leads you to believe that these might be stilt dwarves, although they're not currently wearing any of their rigs. But they are very efficiently working their way through the act of rigging up this vessel to get ready to set off. There is another vehicle that definitely has a little bit more of a military cast to it. These all have cannon ports, by the way. You're absolutely right, Todd. Pirates are always a concern. The first dwarven kind of wooden vessel has about four cannons on it. Definitely looks a little bit older and worse for wear, but is being very efficiently maintained. The middle vessel looks a little bit newer, a little bit more streamlined, still is sail operated, has a predominantly human crew.
You said the first one is older and has four cannon ports and is on sail, runs on sail?
It's a older looking wooden vessel run by a mix of dwarves that, since they're not operating a traditional dwarven vessel like you would see northern or southern dwarves, it leads you to believe that these might be stilt dwarves, especially with their association with the Mercantile Guild. Then the middle vessel is another wooden vessel. It's got 6 cannon ports, has steel banding reinforcing portions of it, has a very prominent, like if you tried to make Ducky a lady and sexy, masthead, like a ducky with just great big honkers. Predominantly human crew, although I actually spot one green-skinned tiefling, a couple of Goliath actually wandering the deck, and a couple of lizard folk, all kind of bustling around the deck in a slightly more rambunctious fashion. There definitely seems to be a lot more bro energy there. One guy gets kind of shoved off the side and they're all laughing at him. He winds his way back up and decks the guy that pushed him off. The third vessel is completely unique. It appears to be all metal, doesn't seem to have a crew on it, has a very unique metal plated masthead at the front of it that has almost like a stretched out face on the front of it. And there is a single gnome standing talking to the harbor master for that ship. There's no visible cannons on that, but it definitely is the most advanced looking one. And Fate, give me an Arcana check.
This feels like a Ghostbusters. Choose your destroyer.
That's not a good one. That's an 11.
You can't pin it down. I mean, you can recognize an artificer's work from a distance, Fate, but you can't really pin down how much of this thing is mechanics and how much of it is potentially magical from this distance. So you got a older looking vessel with an efficient looking crew of stilt dwarves, a robust looking sailing vessel with a more rambunctious kind of rowdy mixed crew, and then a third bronze, and it looks like steel, but steel boats wouldn't float. What the fuck? You're having trouble wrapping your head around it for a little bit. It's got what looks like these sweeping arms that kind of come down into the water to these other flotation, almost look like smaller little boats that may help stabilize it, you think. But again, all you can see is an individual gnome talking to the harbor master for that one.
As in case of mutiny, we may only have to kill one person.
Wait, what? Are you assuming and planning mutiny before we even get onto the boats?
Always. When I'm on a boat, someone usually doesn't like me and they try to mutiny.
I can't imagine anyone not liking you.
It has happened many of times. I don't know why.
That's crazy to me. It's absolutely fast. No, could never happen.
Todd is a swashbuckler, and swashbuckling and water ways go together, right? And ships.
He's a land swashbuckler, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Sure. No. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
He land buckles.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm inclined to go with the fancy shiny boat because it's shiny. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
I just like the fact that the fancy shiny boat.
I'm inclined to go with the second boat.
As the card holder, it is 100% Baba's decision, ultimately.
And you said shiny boat had... didn't appear to have a crew, just the one person?
You only see a single gnome. That doesn't mean there isn't a crew. You just currently only see the single gnome talking to the harbor master.
I bet there's robots.
Or magic.
Or magic, yeah.
Or magic robots.
Or magic robots.
The second boat's got a wildly diverse crew, and I like to hang out with those type of peoples.
They had some humans and some Goliaths. If I have to fight them.
I'd definitely like to hear everyone's opinion before I make a decision, though. Which boat do you like? You guys like?
One at a time. Let's go around in intro order. Baba's asked the question. So first up would be...
Todd believes you should go with the new hotness. There is... is it a boat that we don't know how it works? I'm almost intrigued to see how it works. And if we have to murder someone, it's only one person we have to murder.
Sounds like fear.
No.
How many sails on the first and how many sails on the second? How many masts, excuse me, on the first and second?
They're both two-masted. All the ships are the same size.
Oh, okay. I say we go with the middle one. Double-masted, 6 cannons. We already got a crew aboard. Catering's probably good. If not, I was going to say Todd, but he's just going to make a meal for one. Let's be honest. Right, Fate?
I don't know. He's been feeding me, seemingly. I think he can be trusted.
Well, that's my 2 cents.
You didn't make a suggestion. You just said 2 options.
He said the middle one.
He chose second boat.
He said middle one.
He said boat number 2. Yeah.
I said the middle one. 6 cannons, a full crew.
Oh, okay. I was like,
I also like the shiny new boat. As long as there's weapons on it, we can ask the gnome if there's weapons.
We have the weapons. And Todd flashes to his guns, his muscles, and points to him. He's like, there's the weapon.
Those little string banging arms?
Mm. No, I work out. We got a bow flex on the boat.
Fate is also thinking that we should go with the second boat that has the large crew because he sees plenty of meat shields to protect him from harm.
Oh, my God.
Bala, at the end of the day, it all comes down to you. You do have the option of interviewing the captains if you'd like.
Let's go talk to the gnomish captain.
Okay. All right. As you're walking up, Bala, give me a perception check.
Bam. I perceive it all.
Ooh, he does.
25.
You can see that he's not in an argument with the harbor master, but you definitely pick up snippets of like, okay. I mean, look, this ship is currently the pride of the newly formed artificer faction of the mercantile guild. I mean, you know exactly what'll happen if I don't get this thing back on time. They've got just a ton of money.
Hail and well met, sir.
Oh, hello there, sir. You guys roll up on him. He is... you guys have mostly dealt with gnomes in really weird situations. Mm-hmm. There's Gnome McDonald, the escort / bartender.
Yep.
Then there's Ham Jam Gillum, that was the mechanic, the race mechanic. This guy's got a little bit more of a seasoned kind of adventuring air to him. You know, typical gnome height, dark skinned, clearly a native of either Sama or one of the Western gnomish cadres. Beard is forked and beaded in what, Baba, you would recognize as a coastal sailor fashion from Sama. There's not a whole lot of gnomes that are in there, but clearly this guy has spent some time with some of the fishing / raiding communities that are on the coast of Sama, which gives him a little bit of credibility. He's dressed in I don't want to say rakish fashion, but he's throwing out some big Han Solo captain energy just right off the rip. Baggy sailor pants tied at the ankles, open sandals, leather vest over a slightly open shirt, 3 rings on each hand, and a cap that is pulled down tight over some pretty long dreads, and he looks up at you and goes, hey there, fellow, what can I do for you?
We are looking for a passage to get to Sama.
Well, you know, this really isn't a sailing vessel. We don't sell cruises. Is there a reason why I'm taking you on board this thing? I mean, this ship is...
I have a mercantile guild pass.
Oh.
For passage on any mercantile vessel.
Do you mind if I see it?
Yeah, I'll show it to him.
He looks at it and then looks at you and looks back at it and looks at you. He goes, oh, shit, sir, I had no idea that you were that important. Yeah, you know, your timing's good. I am headed back to Shaitan. This was our maiden voyage. We are coming up to see if the hull, at the speeds that it moves at, could break through the ice. No problem. Crashed right through it. We've had an incredible trip. We're fixing to turn around and head back home. You know, not carrying any cargo, but, you know, I could definitely make arrangements for additional supplies to be brought on. So you and your, are those your associates, employees? What's the situation here? Is this a retainer situation?
Are they within earshot?
Oh, how close are you guys lurking?
We were close. We were definitely within earshot.
Mm-hmm. We weren't directly behind him, but we're close enough to hear.
Baba turns around to check, and they're all standing shoulder to shoulder right behind you. Like what's up, Baba? What's up? What's going on?
They are definitely my employees.
Well, you piece of...
Yeah, all right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, I'll put you in the manager's quarters, and then we could put them in the... is there a hierarchy here? Is there like an assistant manager? Is there like somebody who's an intern? If I was ranking these fellas in level of importance, obviously you'd be number one, as you've established yourself as the boss. Who would be assistant manager?
I am going to roll to see who's assistant manager.
It's his sensei. Sensei Todd. I'm teaching him the ropes.
Wait. Fate proclaims himself assistant to the manager.
Assistant to the manager.
Assistant Todd the manager.
He is learning everything he can from Todd. I'm like his Mr. Miyagi right now. So
I'm going to roll, and intro order will be the order with 1 being Todd and 4 being Jazz.
Okay.
One being Todd. Oh, man. The fates. Oh.
This here is my assistant.
Oh, okay. Assistant or assistant manager?
Or assistant to the manager.
This is the assistant manager. He manages the rest of them.
Oh, no.
Okay. So then you would have two employees and probably one low-level intern or like, we call them the nub around the part. So we'll just say, who's the nub? We don't have to roll for every one of these. Just tell me who the nub is. You'll get the manager suite. The assistant manager will get the second nicest quarters. The two employees get the same thing. They sleep in the hold, but the nice part of the hold, the nub is up on the deck.
Not it.
Bob is remembering a time, and even though he looks different now, he's still offended by the fact that he was charmed by Moyo. He looks at Moyo and he's like, the robot is the nub.
And Baba, give me a history check real quick.
Got you. Oh, that's a flat roll of a 9.
Okay. You don't remember shit. Sorry. It's a DC 10. You remember something vaguely about Warforged and their interactions in Shaitan when you scampered through previously. You can't pin your mind down on it. So, Moyo, did you want to ask him something?
Yes. My good man, my good gnomish man, when you went before setting sail, did you break?
Now, first of all, nub. You can address me as captain or sir. I am not your man.
Captain Man, when you were, before you set sail the first time, did you break a bottle of champagne against this hole as a traditional sailing tradition?
No, not all traditions are the same, and she wouldn't have liked that very much.
Who's she?
The ship turns its face a little bit towards you and goes, it's me. I'm right here. And no, I don't need a random bottle of booze broken against me to christen me on a voyage. I know exactly how important I are, and I'm not even sure if christen makes sense in this universe. So, in a context. So,
yeah.
If you want to pour booze all over something, go get yourself a tawdry Doc Paramore.
What?
Did the boat just talk?
Oh, yeah. So, the boat is the boat and the crew. It has been a massive undertaking for us to engineer a Warforged of this scale and size and scope.
Oh, no.
That had a body shaped like this. So, she is the fastest ship in the fleet, tough as nails. 7 cannons, 3 on each side, 1 on the back that can actually be rolled on rails from the front to the back if you needed to shoot it out on the back. Auto rowing rows for the shallows. Just a completely the most stable boat. The pontoons that you can decide that I currently have deployed can retract for speed or extend for additional stability. She is lovely. And you hear the boat go, thank you very much. And you see him kind of look over at you and kind of throw his voice down. It's like, look. You just, believe me, even if I didn't mean all that, I certainly wouldn't say anything bad about her out here.
Upon hearing that, Baba doesn't even want to see the other boat. Yeah, he's convinced this is the boat that we're going on.
Cool. Is there anything else you guys want to do before you load up onto the vessel?
Does the boat have a name?
Yes, she does have a name. It's Ham Jam Gillum. No.
Do they have any kind of... Dramamine in this world?
Does Todd get seasick?
Todd's an urban bounty hunter.
We were all going to do seasickness rolls, but thank you for volunteering to have yours at disadvantage, Harland. I really appreciate it.
Wait, I just asked for Dramamine. Nope. You asked me if there was anything I needed before we got on.
Die has been cast.
Moyle says at advantage, right?
Moyle, as a Warforged, you really don't have guts, so and you don't eat. So you're, as far as I'm concerned, immune.
So I take it that there is no anti-sickness pills that I can go and purchase or find.
Yeah, we call her the Colossal because, you know, she's like a Warforged Colossus. It's she's the Colossal.
It's a little... On the nose.
Well, look, man, I'm a very literal person. What did you want me to call her? You have a better name? I'd like to hear it. Possibly one that's also a synonym for the Titanic? I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to tip my hand here. This part's getting edited out. See?
Titania?
Is there anything else you guys wanted to do before you loaded on the ship?
Not that I can think of.
Any magical spells that could stop
sleep?
Seasickness?
Sleep.
I'm not getting on that plane, Hannibal.
Do we have to give you milk to...
I can put Todd to sleep.
The Colossal is a medium-sized sailing ship, has a forecastle and a quarterdeck that aforementioned cannon is currently mounted on the forecastle, but you can see some rail tracks where it will come down a ramp and be able to wheel and go back up onto the raised quarterdeck. There is a captain's chair, not so much a wheel, on the quarterdeck where a wheel would traditionally be. Down on the main deck, there is a broad expanse of deck. There are a door that leads to a large forward cabin, which is we're going to say this is the manager's cabin, and the assistant manager's cabin is on the rear of the main deck with the two employees sleeping in the other cabin to the right there, within the nub being up on the top deck. Then you have the lower deck and the hold. A very decently sized vehicle, but it's like being on a brand new starship. No, like brand new cruise ship that hadn't really been equipped to handle new people. So as you guys kind of clamber on board, you see the Captain Man, Segnizzle, or Seggy, or Manny. To anybody other than Moyle, the nub is not allowed to be disrespectful.
Manny Segs.
I'm going to call him Mayonnaise.
Manny Segs.
You know, everything is very plain, very clean, very well engineered. From what you can see, it almost looks like it's one solid piece. Like, you can't find a seam or rivet anywhere. The doors are solid metal plates with a porthole facing outward that have a cover that flip open. As you walk towards them, they slide open with a little bit of a whoosh sound to them. When you step in, they whoosh shut. Down in the hold, there are a few rows of lighting, and you guys are stuck there for about an hour or two while the supplies that Man arranged for show up at the dock and get loaded on. A decent amount of rations for what should be, not tipping my hat, what will be a two-week journey if they travel the slowest way. Should you decide to get closer to the spire, you could potentially speed that up, but everything kind of gets loaded up. There's a full galley set up downstairs that Todd and Fate kind of romp around a little bit. The lower deck is, so the hold is actually fitted for the cargo, and that's where the supplies go down to. The lower deck has almost a military ready room vibe. There are a couple of tumbling like practice mats where people would spar, some empty weapons racks where weapons would be arrayed. It looks like almost a troop carrier that is set up to hold the gear for a squad of commandos in place, but hasn't been really stocked with anything yet. Everything loads up and you guys are getting ready to depart. And he goes, "All right, guys, I'm sorry. We got to wait a couple minutes before the priest shows up."
The priest. Oh, priest.
Yeah. I don't follow any particular deity, but the Mercantile Guild has a deal with the Tempest Church that we have to have one of their clerics on board. You know, normally they come into port, they load up and they come out. It's kind of what I was arguing with the dock captain. When you guys showed up, I kind of drew the short straw and got, you'll see.
Okay.
And walking up the gangplank is a somewhat familiar figure that stops at the edge of the gangplank, tosses a ridiculously oversized bag that clinks down with the very distinct clink and clank of a number of water pipes. A goblin, bedecked in the robes of the Stormlord, stops short.
I knew it.
Looks up to you guys and goes, "Fellas, it's me, Spooky Leo!"
Yeah!
All right, so I know, timeline-wise, they just saw Spooky Leo like Tuesday. And while there was plenty of time for Spooky Leo to get up north, while the guys ran back to Taliesin, met with Ognum, drove halfway up to the Rotalar Mountains, got involved in a pretty cool encounter, if I do say so myself, before dropping Elias off and then trucking back cross-country, plenty of time for Spooky Leo to have made it north from the drop-off point of the blimp. But it feels like he was just here yesterday, timeline-wise, when in reality, it had been over a year since they'd seen that little bastard. And I'd always planned on making him back before, in some really bizarre polling, he became the most sexually desired NPC of the podcast's history. Y'all got some real weird kinks. And Always wanted to bring him back. This boat trip was an opportunity to do it. But I just realized right when I published the blimp episode, I went, ah, fuck, man. Spooky Leo is going to be almost back-to-back episodes. So, yeah, what are you going to do? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to thank the patrons of the show, the people who make an effort to invest in our program to help us provide bigger and better content. People like A Roboticized Private Eye, Brian, Bryce, Dean, Dreakin, Eric, Gibbons Camp. I suppose I should be nice to Turner and change my Patreon name. And while I still haven't heard Noah pronounce Pikachu incorrectly, I did hear him say Pokemon today in this week's episode of The Skeptocrat. And that's pretty close. Pokemon. Yeah, I actually recorded it so that I could get it into this and remember what it sounded like because it was so off-putting. And I went, oh my God, I can't wait till Lila hears this. So, yeah. Jason Douglas Rice, Korobe Nikki, Lurgnag. Don't ever change Lurgnag. Miles, Todd God for MVP. You can change. Moyle would gladly give up his place on deck for you to bed down for the night, mainly because he would take that opportunity to take whatever bunk you had vacated and left open because he really set himself up for getting screwed over by that captain. But his heart would kind of be in a good place when he did it for you. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Does he even have a heart now? Gair, the sleepy Norwegian, Hannah, Jogan, Loki, the angry dwarf, Rin B, the Badger 1230, or is it the Badger 1230? The world may never know. Thomas Jacob Eldrin, totally got your keys covered. No, he'll make sure you don't lose them. He's a ranger. He can find things. What did you think? Oh, God. Y'all look gross. Andrew, Bill, and the holder of what may be my new favorite patron name, Window Liquors Anonymous. Fate, come over to your house and douse whatever you need in highly flammable explosive oil this summer. Because, I mean, if it's as hot as it fucking is here in Texas, that will obviously not cause any problems whatsoever. Oof. It's hot, y'all. Ben, Matt Ross Jones, Saga, Zork Fox, and resident patron, and accomplished Doctor Who cosplayer, Lee, whatever bubble bubbles up, including Babatunde's respect for you and his giant water bubble. Is that a Lucas with the lid off reference? It is. And if you get that, you're fucking old. Old like me. But you know what warms this grizzled, old, sour DM's heart? Our patrons and the support they give our show. And you know what I give them in return? Besides my undying appreciation and more than an insubstantial amount of pandering, extra content. Content like behind-the-scenes audio. Like when the guys talk about Spooky Leo in the behind-the-scenes stuff leading into this episode, which meant that they were setting me up for the Spooky Leo return inadvertently. It was delicious, man. It was so great. And I was just, they were primed for it. It feels great. You'll get to hear me tingle with excitement with if you listen to that behind the scenes audio, which only the patrons get. They also get content like the MVP show, where you find out what exactly was going on with those other boats and what it might have meant had they chosen those. Was I really going to cut Spooky Leo out of the campaign if they didn't pick the giant robot boat? Only one way to find out. Listen to the MVP show like our patrons. Extra video content like the challenge of the challenge ratings and the tournament of champions, which we really hope to get wrapped up this month so we can award somebody the championship belt that was purchased thanks to you patrons hitting one of our Patreon goals. They're going to get additional lore, world building, the Hunter's Party, our oh God, that yar, it's going to get real old real quick in a couple episodes, gang. Trust me. But it's our supernatural rewatch and homebrew show that even if you don't listen to it for the bizarre tangents I go on reviewing and recapping a show from 15 years ago, some of which has held up well, some of which hasn't, but definitely pulls in some weird lore. You get a ton of content on the homebrew side of things. Monsters, additional scenarios. I've made more maps probably for that shit than I have for the actual campaign. It's crazy. Anyway, so if you want to support, head on over to patreon.com/GMDLcast. Link in the show notes below for your convenience, because that's how much we fucking care, and see what you can do to support. But look, a lot of people are nervous right now about what's happening with the economy. Additional COVID waves are going down. It's still a weird fucking time. We get it. And if you can't financially support the show, we understand. There is something you can do to help out the Party of Five, the Pentagoons. Tell somebody about the show. Strangers, friends, coworkers, countrymen, countrywomen, city women. This has gone a weird direction. Tell them about the show. Encourage them to listen. One in five people decide on which podcast they should listen to next based on the recommendation of a friend, family, coworker, or handsome or sexy stranger. And look, is there any better way for you to validate how attractive you are than by telling somebody about our show? If there is, I don't know. 1 in 5. Think about that. If we didn't have that, if we don't get that, that's like losing one of the members of the party of five, like Baba. And if we didn't have Baba, I'm pretty sure these guys would have burned down a capital city inadvertently as they clusterfucked their way around a basic premise. Fate was going to fireball the fire as a preventative measure. Whew. So anyway, tell somebody about our little corner of the actual play multiverse. We absolutely appreciate it. We appreciate your support. We appreciate your listening. Thank you so much for hanging in. And as always, hope you enjoyed the show.